Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 54 of our live monthly Q&A, Ask the Experts with Sinton's employment team. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sinton's. We're a massive treat for you this morning. We've got three speakers, so we're doing away with our usual format of two, and we're going with three, and they are on the screen in front of you. We have Associate Angela Carver, we have partner Max Winthrop, and we have training solicitor Karina Diaz. So good morning to all of you. Usual format, although we are on theme in this episode because today it is a National Bullying at Work Day. So we are acknowledging that and we are acknowledging the theme. So the questions are questions that actually you've not sent in to us, but it's questions that we do get asked quite a lot, and they do relate to the theme. So that's what we're doing on the 23rd of February in 2024. So enough from me. Karina is going to kick off. Each of our speakers is going to have one question each. We're going to go from Karina to Angela, Max, and back to me to conclude. But for now, I'll stop talking. Karina, good morning, and over to you.
Thank you all for joining us today. I hope you can hear me. The first question today is an attempt to summarize some of the key things about bullying, being a very broad question and topic. It could take the full length of our session to just cover that point, but I have picked three of my key things about bullying to talk to you about today. Firstly, there is no legal definition of bullying, and there isn't as such a legal prohibition of bullying in the workplace. However, this doesn't mean to say that employers are safe from claims regarding bullying. There isn't a standalone claim, but where bullying behavior is, for example, related to characteristic protected by the Equality Act 2010, then such behavior may amount to harassment, and employees can bring harassment claims in the employment tribunal. There are a number of other claims which could arise in relation to bullying. We actually covered these in great detail through my colleague Samuel Scott in episode 48 of our Ask the Expert series. You can view this on our website under the videos section if you are interested in that detail. Just continuing on the link between bullying and harassment, they are indeed close relatives. If you look at the definition of bullying, which comes from ACAS and is probably quite recognizable and present in workplace policies, they describe bullying as unwanted behavior from a person or a group that is either offensive, intimidating, malicious, or insulting, or an abuse or misuse of power that undermines, humiliates, or causes physical or emotional harm to somebody. If we then go and look at the harassment definition, which is in the Equality Act 2010, it sounds very similar. Unwanted conduct related to a relevant protected characteristic that has the purpose or effect of violating an individual's dignity or creating an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating, or offensive environment for that individual. Both involve unwanted conduct, although a difference between them is bullying is generally motivated by some form of power or status, while harassment, which needs to be connected to a protected characteristic, can occur whether or not the perpetrator does it on purpose. Bullying often involves comments or behavior related personally to an individual. It could be about their appearance, which then may be linked to their sex or sexual orientation or age or gender reassignment. It could be about their opinions, which could then amount to belief protected under the Equality Act, or it could be about their ability to do their job, which in turn could be linked to age or disability. So it isn't difficult for bullying to stray into harassment and then lead to a risk of a claim. It could also be a third party observing the bullying behavior or language who could take offense and make a complaint of harassment, or even the target individual may not actually have the protected characteristic of which they are ridiculed. For example, a straight individual could be mistakenly teased for being gay because of the way they appear or they dress. Particular care should be taken with behavior of a sexual nature, including compliments. If unwanted, this may amount to sexual harassment. And as you will be aware, in October 2024, a new employer duty to prevent sexual harassment will come into force, which will require employers to actively take reasonable steps to prevent sexual harassment. These reasonable steps are likely to include having up-to-date policies, which are known to all employees, enforcing these policies consistently by managers who are trained to do this, and policies should be refreshed and communicated regularly. This should be done alongside creating a culture which encourages everyone to speak up for themselves and for others, and generally foster respectful interactions in the workplace at all levels and between all levels in an organization. My last point that I wanted to talk about is about banter in the workplace and when or does it amount to bullying and or harassment. And I'm sure you'll have heard it was only banter or I didn't mean to cause offence as an excuse in perhaps grievances about a colleague's alleged offensive comments about the complainant or another individual in the team. Whilst banter can be a healthy form of informal and relaxed interaction within a team, this is only so as long as it is done respectfully and sensitively to all individual preferences within the team. Where banter relates to topics which may fall into the harassment arena, like I've mentioned before, it is key that managers keep a close eye on the communication and intervene promptly when they hear or observe anything concerning. This could be initially by addressing the person who's made the comments and making them aware, for example, that what they said about someone's appearance or about someone's opinions was received with visible discomfort by the person themselves or maybe others around at the time. The added difficulty with banter is that it may be okay for a time, even a sustained period, but it can become unwanted very quickly if the banter goes too far or oversteps the mark. For example, if it becomes progressively more offensive to the point of becoming unacceptable, where an individual may have previously willingly participated in the banter, it is no longer okay for them to listen to that. It may also be tempting to ignore until someone makes a formal complaint, but even if no claims are put forward, from a commercial point of view, this approach is likely to have consequences such as creating a toxic environment, which will then lead to high turnover and loss of key talent, as well as potential reputational damage to the employment brand and subsequent recruitment difficulties, all of which will impact negatively on the bottom line. So I would again reiterate the importance of having robust and clear policies, including clear behaviour expectations, and deal with concerning banter swiftly and consistently, and ensure all managers are well equipped to deal with bullying and harassment complaints effectively. And I will leave you with, I suppose, news that the situation with bullying might change in the future. There is a private members bill on bullying and respect at work, which is going through the House of Commons at the minute. I had a first reading in December 23 and is scheduled for a second reading on 7th of June. If it becomes law, this will then provide a statutory definition of bullying at work, and it will allow employees to bring specific claims relating to workplace bullying to be heard in an employment tribunal. It will provide for a respect at work code, which will set minimum standards for work environments to show positive and respectful measures that they take. It will give powers to the Equalities and Human Rights Commission to investigate workplaces where there is evidence of a culture of bullying or of multiple incidents of bullying, and the Commission will also be able to take enforcement action. Of course, the second reading of this bill is after the next general election, so it is a case of watch this space as anything could happen, but we will keep you informed with the developments in future. So that's it for me. So I will hand over to my colleague Angela.
Thank you, Karina. It's always very interesting to hear the full information regarding bullying. And it's Karina's last Q&A as well, because she is moving seats. So unfortunately, you won't get the pleasure of Karina's insights in the next Q&As, but we'll have another trainee who hopefully will step up to the plate. So the questions that I've been looking at is, how do we deal with the allegation of bullying in the workplace? Now, as set out by Karina, there is no legal definition of bullying, but it should be viewed in a similar manner to harassment under the Equality Act. But what constitutes bullying is rather wide, and I would say quite subjective. So you could have things such as repeated criticism, spreading rumours, putting someone down, excluding someone from team events, or giving someone a heavier workload than somebody else. Now, bullying in its own right, even though it's not a claim, doesn't need to fall within a protected characteristic, whereas harassment does. And bullying can easily fall within harassment. And as Karina said, they are, you know, very close friends and colleagues in terms of that. So it's important as an employer to understand what harassment is and whether on the face of a complaint, it could actually be harassment. So how do you handle it? Well, the first thing you should do is investigate. So broadly speaking, a process will involve the same as any other investigation. So identifying the allegation or allegations that are being made, looking into the matter, then considering suspension of your alleged bully or harasser, potentially then moving into a disciplinary process, and then the standard trajectory of communicating the disciplinary hearing outcome and giving a right of appeal. But you would also give a grievance outcome to your individual who has raised the complaints. Now, in relation to confidentiality, you would not have to say what the decision in a disciplinary hearing was in relation to the individual, but that action has been taken. Otherwise, that's a potential breach in relation to that employee. Now, when you investigate, it's really important that you obtain as much detail as possible. So who is the person who is involved? What exactly happened? Do they have texts? Do they have emails? Do they have documents? And is there something on CCTV which might be time sensitive that you need to download quickly? Where did it happen? And that's quite important when we look at something called vicarious liability, which I'll pop onto briefly at the end. So was it in the workplace? Was it related to the workplace? Was it something that happened on a night out where perhaps they've bumped into the individual? When did it happen? How much time's passed? Why are you telling me now? Did it happen last week? Was it last year? What's happened to make you raise it now? And what exactly did happen? Are they comments? Are they messages? Has there been inappropriate touching? Has there been banter which has crossed a line? And are there any witnesses that you might need to consider? Now, when you look at an allegation of bullying, usually I would say three key things occur. So the first will be an employee will say, I just want to get this off my chest. I don't want to take it any further. Can you promise me you won't do that? Now, as an employee, you can't promise that. You can't guarantee confidentiality if an allegation of harassment is made in your workplace. You've got a duty as an employer to create a safe workplace, and it may well be that you do need to investigate. And if you fail to do so, you'd also be complicit in a workplace which permits harassment to persist. And that in turn will undoubtedly lead to a lack of trust and confidence in you as an employer by your employees, and it could, of course, lead to a claim, as Karina's identified that Samuel discussed in a previous episode. Now, there are situations where you may be able to maintain confidentiality. Now, this could be a situation where, for example, Phoebe says, oh, Robert said this to me and I was upset. Okay, well, in this instance, you might be able to offer some guidance and suggest a way forward for the two to work together. For example, have you mentioned this to Robert? Have you spoken to him about it? And then what you would do is follow up with that employee and see if anything's changed in perhaps 7 days. The key thing is to keep a note of what you said, what they've said, and why you haven't escalated it at that point, just to protect you as an employer. There are also complexities when investigating complaints around confidentiality. And confidentiality is usually motivated by the fear of retaliation. So if somebody receives retaliation as a result of raising complaints that fall under the Equality Act, for example, harassment, this could well give rise to a claim for victimisation. Now, to the extent that you can convince those in the process, you will say that you do not tolerate retaliation, and you can often alleviate concerns about confidentiality that way, particularly if you do take matters seriously. Some people might say, I'm scared to say something in case Denise, my line manager, then won't give me more favourable shifts, for example. Well, if Denise starts to mistreat you because you've made a complaint, well, that would be a disciplinary offence for Denise. And the final matter is that usually it is commonplace for some people to prejudge a situation. I've known Sarah for 5 years, she wouldn't hurt a fly. Rachel's really timid and she gets offended by everything. Jonathan's like that with everybody. And these are common notions that get expressed. Now, as an investigator and as an employer, you should avoid prejudgment because that can have an impact on how you investigate. You also need to consider when the complaint's made, whether or not you will take this through the formal route or the informal route. And you also need to consider whether or not a suspension might be appropriate in the circumstances. So if allegations have been made which could potentially constitute an unsafe working environment, or the individual being present might impede on your ability to undertake a fair investigation, then you should look at a suspension. Now, suspension is deemed to be a neutral act and it should be on full pay. And you should then follow your trajectory of your normal grievance and disciplinary policy. Now, it's also important to note that if the allegations made could well be classed as harassment, harassment is also a criminal offence. Harassment and actually stalking together can be a criminal offence. And the main difference is that harassment in the criminal sense doesn't need to be related to a protected characteristic, so age, gender, sex, for example, and it must occur on more than one occasion. Now, that can make you quite wary because actually what has seemingly been a small complaint raised by an employee could well potentially be a complaint which falls within the criminal realm and could be a custodial sentence for one of your colleagues. Now, harassment carries a sentence of up to 6 months in custody. But if there is actions which put people in fear of violence, it goes up to 10 years. And if it's racially motivated, there's a 14-year maximum custodial sentence that could be put against one of your colleagues there. So you need to make sure that any complaint that comes to you is fully explored because it could well fall within harassment under the Equality Act and also harassment in a criminal sense. So what should you do? Act sensibly and pragmatically when a complaint is made. Don't just dismiss it, explore it. Is it just two colleagues who are having a little bit of a personality clash and you need to deal with it? Or is it something more? How are your policies? What's your equality and diversity policy like? Do you have a bullying and harassment policy? Do your managers know about that policy? Do they follow that policy? Do you put it into place? If you have any concerns, make sure your managers are trained. If the complaint is raised, retrain them, look at it again. Make sure you act on any information that comes your way to ensure that you're not complicit in any workplace bullying. If a complaint for harassment is raised, for example, as an employer, you have a defence called the reasonable steps defence. That is, I have put everything in place to avoid harassment in my workplace, and therefore I am not liable for the actions of this employee who has acted rogue and against what we enforce. And that would also hopefully in turn result in no constructive unfair dismissal claims being brought, which could be the basis of bullying and harassment, both separately, i.e. I've lost trust and confidence in my employer. And then there's harassment and victimisation under the Equality Act. So in short, investigate, have an open forum with your employees, make sure your policies are up to date, investigate, and if there are any issues, act upon them quite swiftly. So, and I will as well point out, my colleagues are all supposed to be in pink today, and none of them have followed the trajectory for the anti-bullying day. So feel free to send them any comments about the fact that they're all in black. Thank you very much. I will pass over to Max for the final question.
Right, sorry about that. Classic being on mute. Anyway, so good morning, everybody. In a way, what I've got to say here kind of builds on what Angela's just been discussing. And I suppose the fundamental point to remember is that whilst clearly allegations of bullying must always be taken seriously, they can impact upon the person, the alleged perpetrator. Note I use the word alleged, because we've still got to keep an open mind on these issues. And however horrendous the allegations may be, there's always the possibility of the allegations being false. Now, if you look at this third question there, but like a lot of things in life, I think it's probably easy if you break it down into bits. So, you know, just like the Second Schleswig-Holstein War or the Sacrofama riddle in Purgatorio may seem really opaque when you first come across them. Pull it apart into pieces and think what's going on here. Now, looking at that question, I think there's kind of three points I'd want to make. So we talk about a grievance process being carried out and making findings of bullying by a particular person. Fair enough. And of course, you've got to investigate those grievances. But where do you go from there? Now, the next little bit of that question asks or says and progresses to a disciplinary. How do we get from the allegations in the first place to the disciplinary process? Now, I wouldn't recommend the grievance process being treated as a substitute for the actual investigation of disciplinary allegations. You've kind of cut out an essential part of the story there that you need in a potentially fair dismissal. So if you haven't had an investigation into the conduct, I would just be cautious and pause there. So in other words, remember that in a fair dismissal, you're looking at an investigatory process, a dismissal process, and an appeal. Now, that dismissal process, the dismissing officer is going to have to come to his or her conclusions about the allegations. And it may be that in progressing a grievance, the person investigating that grievance has operated in a much more broader fashion rather than looking at specific incidents. And so a cutting out of the proper process could mean that the person doing the decision isn't aware of some vital material that might make a difference to the outcome. Now, pausing there a moment, we probably all remember cases like Orr and Milton Keynes. Remember, that was the one where there was a fair dismissal, notwithstanding behind the dismissal were allegations of race discrimination. But the dismissing officer didn't know about those allegations. And in that particular instance, it was held to be fair that the dismissal had occurred. Because remember, we're back to those old fundamental tests in unfair dismissal about whether or not the employer has reasonable grounds for belief. Now, that won't always work. It's all very fact specific. There's that difficult case of duty involving whistleblowing. But I think perhaps on a more practical level, can I take you to the disabled toilet in a pub in Ealing? I don't mean that literally. I mean, for the purpose of this particular case called Udin and Ealing Borough Council. And what happened there was something untoward went on between two people in the disabled toilet on a works night out. There were allegations made by one of those parties with regard to conduct that wasn't merely unpleasant and unmentionable on a Friday in Lent, but went beyond that into criminality. The investigating officer, however, knew that at a later stage, that police investigation had been withdrawn by the victim. But when the case was presented at the disciplinary hearing, the investigating officer already knew the allegation had been withdrawn. But it was presented on the basis to the dismissing officer, but the allegation was still current. So material facts were kind of withheld from that dismissing officer. And in that particular instance, although the background details are a little bit more complicated, but that element made that decision process unfair. So really, I suppose the takeaway here is remember that if we're moved from allegations leading to a disciplinary process, even if those allegations are of quite unacceptable conduct, you've still got to remember the basics when it comes to unfair dismissal. And whoever's deciding that case has got to be able to understand the case that's being put, and they've got to consider material facts that are presented to them. And withholding material facts, or if the dismissing officer simply relies on earlier findings without having the opportunity or giving the alleged perpetrator the opportunity to question and challenge that fact finding, then it's likely that that dismissal will be unfair. So that takes us really to the end of that question, which points is what happens if this disciplining manager disagrees to the grievance findings. Well, the disciplining manager's got to, if they disagree, then it's very likely that they cannot come to the conclusion that the allegations are made out, and that in those circumstances, if we're talking about conduct type dismissals, the dismissal is going to be unfair. That's those sort of issues come within our 98.4 point, i.e. the general reasonableness of the dismissal itself. So we're really looking again there at the allegations, what's the evidence that supports that, that's presented to the dismissing officer. And if that evidence is inadequate, then the dismissing officer's got to be their own person, and they've got to come to the conclusions that they think are supported by the evidence that's been presented to them. And I suppose really that this does illustrate one danger. Somebody raises issues about another employee's conduct. How are we treating those? Is that a generalized grievance? Could be, but it may be more appropriate to sort of think, well, this is an allegation of inappropriate behavior, and it's got to be taken seriously, and it does mean a disciplinary process. Almost to the same, I have some, you know, I suppose most employment lawyers kind of have concerns about grievances. They can be a real pain at times. And I think that there's a danger that they can be perceived even by a complainant. Supposing a complainant makes a really serious allegation about somebody, in certain circumstances, I think pushing that into the grievance route might almost feel like a sort of attempt to kind of delay or cover things up. You might well be better going straight through a disciplinary process on a proper investigation, of course. As I said, really, these cases are very fact specific, and one has to be cautious. One has to be, as Angela said, very objective about how that process is carried out. And remember, however serious the allegation, even allegations, gross misconduct, inappropriate conduct of a sexual nature, etc., or bullying, it doesn't mean you displace the normal process of investigation, consideration, decision making. So that's my contribution to today's discussion, and look forward to the next opportunity to speak to you all. And back to David.
Thanks very much to all three of you. Enjoyed listening to that one as always. Very quickly for me, as I say at the end of each of these sessions, we continue to work hard to produce, release, deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, and that includes all 44 episodes of 44, that's right, isn't it? Have I said that right? 44, I think it's 44. Whatever I said at the beginning, forgive me if I've got that wrong, but that includes all episodes of this live Q&A with Sintons employment team. If you haven't heard enough from us by that point, you can also follow the team on social media, on Twitter at Sintons HR and at Sintons Law. I popped our speakers' details back on the screen for you there, just very, very quickly for people who listen to this via podcast and can't see that. I just will give one telephone number for everyone, 01912267878, and then individual emails should you like to get in touch to discuss anything our speakers have raised today, or indeed in any of the rest of the sessions. Angela.carver@sintons.co.uk, Max.winthrop at sintons.co.uk, and Karina.ds@sintons.co.uk. That's it from us. We will speak to you again on the last working Friday of March. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you once again for tuning in, and have a great March. Take care.